Welcome to Worldview from WBEZ. I'm Jerome McDonald. The Divvy Bike Share has changed Chicago streets. I'll talk with the head of a bike share company that's changing streets all over. This time every year, organizations here compete to see who does the most biking. We'll discuss the Bike Commuter Challenge, and they give old bikes a new home and do a lot of good in between. We'll check in with working bikes. Don't forget, you can join the conversation on Twitter at WBEZ Worldview. I think the thing that's changed our streets in Chicago the most in the last few years is the Divvy bike system. As someone who rides through the loop every day, I saw the difference right away when Divvy came. It seemed like half the bikes on the streets were instantly Divvies. And if you want some hard data, in May, there were 346,000 trips on Divvies in Chicago. Divvy's parent company is called Motivate, and they own bike share programs in around 10 cities. The CEO of Motivate is Jay Walter, who has lots of experience in the transportation field in places like Hong Kong and London and New York. And Jay's coming to Chicago to participate in the Chicago Forum on Global Cities, hosted by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and the Financial Times. That starts tomorrow. Thanks for joining us, Jay Walter.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You come from the public transportation realm, the hardcore, good old public transportation, not bicycle public transportation. When did you get turned on to bicycle transportation?
Well, you know, it's funny you put it like that. I refer to it as traditional public transit, and I'm still in the public transit field, so I like the way you put that. About 2.5 years ago, I made the switch, and it's been really a wonderful change. I loved, and I still think that traditional public transit is an incredibly powerful force in our cities and has helped to shape our cities. But what we're unlocking today with bike share is opening up something that I think is really defining 21st century cities, and that's wonderful.
When did you first start using a bike share system?
You know, I have to tell you that I've commuted my whole life using public transit. I could count on one hand the number of times I've really taken car trips to get to work. And I had never taken a bicycle to get to work until I joined Motivate as the CEO a few years ago. And it's been a completely eye-opening experience for me, and I've loved it. I like the way it makes me feel. And I don't just mean that in terms of physically. I mean, physically is part of it. But I mean that mentally as well. I enjoy being on the bike. You know, there was one day early on where I was riding to work and I was going over the Brooklyn Bridge, and it was about 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm riding over the Brooklyn Bridge in New York on a bicycle, and I'm thinking, wow, this is really cool. And I realized that I was happy about what I was doing, and that the commute that had tension associated with it for lots of different reasons, that a lot of that just went away. And I'd really enjoyed that. On top of that, everyone started to tell me that I looked better, and I'm guessing that the exercise didn't hurt.
It's amazing how many people are doing it now and how convenient they find the Divvy system. I use it once in a while, but I usually don't. But like I said, half the people I see biking through the loop are doing it. And I was surprised to read that hard data that 346,000 trips a month in Chicago in May, that's a whole lot.
It's a ton, and it's wonderful. And here's the way I look at it. In a number of different cities, Chicago is one of them, in an incredibly short period of time, bike share has become part of the urban fabric of the city. You almost can't remember Chicago before Divvy bikes were all around you. And isn't that really incredible, right? We're really talking about 5 years. And that, I think, is a fundamental change that's there. And when you say, you know, why is it happening? Part of it is convenience in doing it, but part of it also is it's reflecting the way we want to live our lives today. We take it whenever we want. We go wherever we want. The system is ubiquitous in the areas that it serves, and it seems to give us the freedom and the flexibility that we enjoy. And I think Chicago, and I love the fact that Chicago loves Divi, I think Chicago has taken to it as well as any other city in the country.
I was surprised to read some of the data from the other cities. Washington, D.C. does almost as many Divi-type rides as Chicago, and New York does many times more, maybe five times more. They're up to 1.5 million rides in the month of May in New York.
New York's just been an astounding story. We saw a 40% growth in bike share in New York last year. City Bike in New York went from 10 million rides in 2015 to 14 million rides in 2016. And we're already trending well ahead of that for this year. And again, I think it's all part of the same story. What I love to tell people about the New York story is that it is true that we have more members. We have 50% more members than we had 2 years ago. But the other part of it is that people who are members are using it more and more. So the average member took 80 trips per year in 2015. That member is now taking 120 trips per year. And I think what that's saying to us is that instinctively, we're now looking to a bicycle where we used to look to something else, maybe a taxi, maybe the public transit system, but now we're looking to a bicycle to do that. And as people find the way to do that, I think we'll continue to see that explosion in a really, really positive way.
I'm talking with Jay Walder. He is the CEO and president of Motivate. They are the parent company of Divi Bike Share in this region and lots of other bike shares in the United States. What are some of the other things that you're finding out? Because you are accumulating a lot of data, and I've used bike share programs in other cities when I visit as a tourist. I imagine there's things that people don't realize are going on or don't think are going on very prolifically, and then you see the data and you say, oh my gosh, this is how people are using it.
You mentioned three cities, New York, Washington, and Chicago, and there are clearly city differences in the use of bike share. So one of the points about this would be tourism. People love to come to Chicago and go around the lake. It's a fantastic day or an afternoon to be able to do it. Divi's convenient. It's easy to do that. Similarly, in Washington, D.C., you know, the mall is used in a similar way. Tourist trips, despite the large number of trips that we see in New York, tourist trips represent a much smaller proportion of the trips in New York than we see in other cities. And so, you know, we've been trying to think about how to encourage more of that in places that people might like to go along the Hudson River or over the Brooklyn Bridge to be able to do it. Where we are finding, and it's not surprising to us, I mean, we're a country of 50 states and many, many great cities. And there are differences. And I think one of the things that we have to recognize about this is how we make it work in each individual location, how we partner with cities and communities to be able to do that, and recognizing that we will never be able to paint this with one broad brush. It is much more finely tuned than that.
How do you work suburbs into the equation? We've got Divi in a couple of suburbs of Chicago. I imagine there are other places where the density isn't enough. How do you make that weave together?
That is one of the challenges. So in a city like Washington, D.C., and we mentioned it before, it's really five counties, the District of Columbia, but it's also Alexandria and Arlington and Montgomery County, Fairfax County. And I think, again, in that case, we have to recognize that the strategies and the way that we serve the communities will not be exactly the same. What we need to do in some of the dense urban areas will be very different than what we need to do for the suburbs. What we have found is that the connectivity of saying this is one regional network is very, very powerful. So somebody who is out in the suburbs and uses bike share occasionally there and also uses it in the city or vice versa, takes the utility out of that and a sense of being in the program that is actually very, very powerful. Second thing that's clear is that bike share cannot be a token station in an area. It can't be one station isolated from other areas. The areas where bike share works best, stations are closely located to each other. People have a sense of being able to make short trips conveniently. And it fits with the proposition. If you have to walk 15 minutes to get on a bike, to ride 15 minutes, to walk 15 minutes to your destination, that's never a proposition that's going to work well for bike share.
You know, I know that bike share's story is not one of unmitigated success. There are places where bike shares fail, and Seattle failed recently. It was due to a couple factors. It seems like helmet laws were a factor and are a factor, and spacing and things like that.
Seattle did fail, and I think that's unfortunate, and I think we should learn from it. I think it's perhaps a combination of factors that come together there, some of which are modifiable and some of which are not. So, as you mentioned, the spacing of stations in Seattle did not follow the model that I just talked about before. The stations were relatively far apart, and I think that made it difficult for the attractiveness of the system to really be seen in that way. Seattle also has a helmet law, and that has some impact upon the use of bicycle share. But two other factors in Seattle are things we will never change. One, not a surprise to anybody, but it rains a lot. And rain turns out to be not really, really good for bike riding. And then the second is that Seattle is actually a very hilly city. And, you know, we talk a lot about the San Francisco Bay Area, for example, as being a hilly area, but Seattle is actually very hilly. And I think when all of those factors came together, it resulted in a bike share system that really didn't take hold and didn't take root. And despite the same hopes and aspirations for a system like you've mentioned that's been developed in Chicago with Divi, the Pronto system in Seattle didn't quite reach what all the hopes would be.
Are there still innovations to be made in the bike share field? I was thinking in particular about e-bikes, and maybe electric bikes would help alleviate a situation like Seattle where you've got to go uphill and you want a little juice.
Absolutely. I mean, as a company, I would say that we're certainly not sitting on our laurels. We're investing in innovation. And, you know, I think our goal should be, how do we continue to break down the barriers that people feel to using bikes and bike share? How do we make it easier? So e-bike technology, I think, offers the potential to deal with difficult topography. As you say, the hills certainly in that case. It offers the potential for people to take longer rides. It also offers the potential for a sweat-free ride on warmer days so that you're more willing to bike in business attire. To me, the goal of e-bike is not speed per se. We're not looking to have people go much faster in doing this, but again, to break down the barriers that will be there. And importantly, I think in the world of bike share, when we refer to e-bike, we're really referring to pedal assist. So the idea would be there is still an active component to what is happening. It's not a throttle, but there's an active component to pedaling, but easier to get started, easier to go up hills, perhaps easier to deal with winds and other things that are part of the natural environment that we deal with.
I'm talking with Jay Walder. He is the CEO and president of Motivate. They are the parent company of Divi Bike Share in this region. And Jay's coming to Chicago to participate in the Chicago Forum on Global Cities, hosted by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and the Financial Times. That starts tomorrow. And when it comes to bike share internationally, I understand Paris does very well. There are cities that do even better than New York.
A few. Paris, I think, has been within, let's say, the Western world, I think Paris has been the gold standard. They were one of the very first cities to have a large-scale bicycle program in a major metropolitan area. And I think Vélib in Paris, you know, has some of the same feeling that you described about Divi, but on a much, much larger scale. New York has now surpassed London for the number of bicycle rides in a year. We're very proud of that. You are seeing some of the European cities starting and investing in e-bike technology, what we were just talking about before. I also think if you look to Asia, China, which of course has a real biking culture, is also bringing innovation to the idea of bike share.
How does a bike share program end up coordinating on urban planning with cities? Do the cities that have this right and are doing these large volumes have something to share with the cities that still are getting up and running?
Absolutely. And this, I think you're hitting on just a huge point that we need to be thinking about, which is really about the urban design of our cities and how they're set up to be able to encourage what I'll call active transportation, walking and biking really being the prime elements of that. One of the things that I love about bike share is that in many cities, the path of bike share development is being coordinated with the development of bicycle lanes, for example. And we're seeing a city like New York, city like Chicago, San Francisco, we're seeing a lot of development of bicycle lanes in a way that's promoting that safe transportation. This is exactly what we should be doing. But I think we're at a point for many, many cities where we really are questioning the use of public space. We're really questioning the underlying proposition of the role that the automobile has in the city. And we're increasingly taking explicit decisions to make active transportation and the use of city space in a different way part of what we care about. And personally, as you can probably tell, I love that. And I think there are great examples in many, many cities of doing this. I think the answer is only going to be to do more of that, not less. I think it fits the values of the things that we care about. And active transportation has a huge environmental benefit for cities as well. You know, if you think about transportation emissions, that represents about a third of net CO2 emissions in the United States. So anything that you are doing that is encouraging healthy living, environmentally friendly living, ease and flexibility, affordability at the same time certainly fits in with the values that I think we all have.
One of the buttons I noticed on your website was one about data and getting your data and using your data. I imagine you know a lot about how people move and want to move through a city because of the bike share data that you end up getting. And you could probably share this with cities and say, we need bike lanes here, we need to do this or that. How does that work?
So it is one of our commitments working with cities to share data. So I think that's usually important. And what we try and do is to work together to be able to understand the patterns of use. And, you know, a lot of it is not terribly surprising. People in general are making trips that are about 15 to 20 minutes on bike share. So it's replacing trips that are being taken by a taxi or public transportation that are 1 to 2 miles of distance. Many of those trips are connecting with other transport modes. But the other thing that I think that the data are showing us is really the evolution of cities. And one of the things that we saw at the turn of the 20th century into the middle of the 20th century was the development of our great cities was really infrastructure led. We built the rail lines and the like, and development followed those paths. In cities all over the world today, we're seeing something very, very different than that. We're seeing cities that are denser and more complex. And we're seeing patterns of travel and transportation that are increasingly disconnected from the traditional public transit lines that we may have laid down a century ago. And one of the things that BikeShare is helping people to understand and to see is how alternative modes of transportation are helping to be able to open up new areas. You know, one of my favorite stories since I've been here was the day that there was an article that ran in the New York Times. I hadn't seen it. I had nothing to do with it. And people started to send it to me. And, you know, I opened the article up, and it was about somebody who was describing the fact that he bought a new apartment in an out-of-the-way area of New York. And the message of this article was, I never would have considered living here if it were not for Citibike. And I think that's increasingly the story that we're seeing in lots of cities, that we are looking for these alternative modes to be able to open up new areas for us, to be able to open up new ways of travel, and that both our residences and our businesses are increasingly in areas that are not as well served by the traditional public transit network. And that's a big part of where bike share is fitting in. Now, over time, it may be that the traditional public transit network catches up. But, you know, the time it takes to build a new rail line and the time it takes to put down bike stations are fundamentally different. And this is one of the real advantages that we have right now.
Jay Walder is the CEO and president of Motivate. They are the parent company of Divvy, and they own bike share programs in around 10 cities in the United States. Jay is coming to Chicago to participate in the Chicago Forum on Global Cities, hosted by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. It starts tomorrow, and thanks for coming to Chicago, and thanks for bringing all the Divvy bikes to the streets.
You're welcome. It's really my pleasure, and Divvy is very special to us and very special to Chicago, and that's terrific. Thank you very much.
How could I forget to mention the bicycle is a good invention? Sitting there in a silent movie beside the only girl who really ever knew me. Happy days but sad facing. Heaven knows I'm on the case. Oh, how could I forget to mention the bicycle?
This is Worldview on WBEZ. I'm Jerome McDonald. Every June, organizations across the region compete to see who bikes to work the most. And we are going to talk about the Bike Commuter Challenge right now. WBEZ is a perennial powerhouse in the competition, and we are a defending champion in the nonprofit division here. Yes, it's true. I am the team leader for WBEZ, the champion in the nonprofit division for 100 to 400 size. And in the studio with us is another perennial powerhouse in the competition, Studio Gang, the architecture firm headed by Jeannie Gang. Their team leader for the Bike to Work Challenge is project architect John Castro. Thank you for joining us, John.
Thank you for having me.
And the organization that sponsors the Bike to Work Challenge every year is the Active Transportation Alliance. They're leading the charge for better transit in this area every day of the year. Ron Burke is executive director. Ron, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Now, this is the 26th year of the Bike Commuter Challenge. Mm-hmm. Explain the storied history of this event.
Well, it got much more storied once WBEZ and Jerome McDonald got involved, of course,
yeah,
as you know.
Blasting it out.
Absolutely, yeah. We've been doing this for 26 years, and you know, hundreds and hundreds of companies compete against each other every year to see who can get the most employees to bike to work. In the past, as you know, Jerome, it's been who can get the highest percentage of their employees to bike to work.
Yeah, right? And that's it's a pretty tall order for some places.
Yeah.
There are some places like Studio Gang gets 100% practically every year. WBEZ, we usually come in between 40 and 50%.
Right.
There's a lot, as the bigger the organizations get, the harder it is to get the percentage big.
Yeah.
And it's been a lot of fun doing it that way because it puts the onus on the organization to get people to ride who don't normally ride.
Right.
That was the original genius.
And that's the goal, of course, is, you know, we've seen. So Bike Commuter Challenge, and this year, by the way, it's presented by Freeman Kevinitis Law Firm. Thank you to those good folks.
And they're a biking attorney firm, and I see Jim Freeman all the time at the events for
many
years.
They help folks, you know, run into situations, right? So the goal all along was to help encourage more folks to try biking to work. Give it a shot. See how it goes. And to have their colleagues encouraging them to do so, to create this competition, to kind of facilitate that. And what we've seen, as you know, is cycling has been growing in leaps and bounds, and this is just one of the programs that's helped, you know, facilitate that. So this year we're kicking it off, Bike Commuter Challenge on June 16th with the Bike Week Rally at Daly Plaza. I know a lot of your listeners have come down there and grab the free T-shirts and have a good time. We're looking for all of you to turn out that morning,
Friday morning.
I come every year.
I'm wearing my T-shirt right now.
Absolutely.
That I got last year. And during the Bike to Week Challenge, I change my shirt every day, and I use a different shirt from a previous challenge because I've been attending so long.
Oh, that is awesome. And so it kicks off on June 16th.
Nobody notices or even says anything to me about that.
I notice.
They just think that, I mean, during this, my coworkers just stare at me like, you are such a freak.
That's funny. So this year, we're doing a couple things new. Number one, we're going to the challenge, again, just to put this in perspective. Companies across 35 different categories compete against each other, right? So we have small, medium, large, like different size companies, different categories, education sector, not-for-profit, for-profit, all to see who can get the most people to bike to work, right? So we start that off on June 16th. This year, we're actually going to do it for 2 weeks instead of one. So folks will be logging their trips at bikecommuterchallenge.org.
Gives me a chance to interfere with my coworkers for 2 weeks out of the year.
2 weeks, exactly. We'll be racking up the points. We'll be having keeping track of which companies are leading in their categories. As you mentioned, Studio Gang has been really right there at the top for a long time. We're going to have some bikeaway happy hours during the Bike Commuter Challenge at Timbuktu, at Revolution Tap Room. We'll be having pit stops all around Chicago.
I saw you at a pit stop last year at the train station.
There you go, right. Starting on June 19th, we'll have pit stops where you can stop in, get free coffee, learn more about the Bike Commuter Challenge. But the main thing we want to really encourage folks to do is register. Whether you're registering as a team leader like Jerome, who's amazing at it, or you already have a team leader at your company and you're signing up to be a member of the team, it's easy to do. It just takes a few seconds at bikecommuterchallenge.org. Plus, when you log your trips, you will be entered in a daily raffle for really cool prizes from the likes of Kryptonite Locks, Cliff Bar, Dark Matter Coffee, Timbuktu. So sign up today. It's a lot of fun, and I know John can tell us more about that.
John, you know, it's interesting. There's motivational techniques for people who do this, and I have done all sorts of insane things. Last year, I gave gifts every day of the challenge to people. I brought flowers for the deck. I brought plates one day. I changed out all the soap in the bathroom to something more pleasing and environmentally sustainable than the soap we were using. What do you do?
Well, we get support from Jeannie. That's first and foremost.
I heard the boss gets up and says, you're all going to ride.
Basically, at office meetings, Jeannie and Mark will get up front and say, you have no excuse not to ride. I mean, there is no excuse not to ride. I mean, Chicago, cycling in Chicago is safe, it's fun, and it's easy and convenient. So, and that's in large part to Active Trans and what they do for the city. But you have to have buy-in from the top. And then also everyone is up for the challenge, everyone in the office. Other incentives include food. So we go to lunch. So, and there may be other incentives.
Soap replacement?
I have not tried soap replacement, but we could try soap replacement. We do have two showers at the office that helps for people with longer commutes. Just trying to make it easy for people to participate, if they need an escort, if they need advice on how to get to work.
And it's worth mentioning, Jerome, that to earn points towards this competition, you don't have to bike all the way to work. We know that for a lot of folks, that can be daunting, especially if you've never biked before or biked to work before. So maybe you bike to the train, right? And then you take the train to work. That's okay. That counts as a trip. You will be earning points for your team.
That's me.
That's you.
So and if you use the app, You gain a few points for the team?
Exactly. If you're a new bike commuter, in other words, if you've never biked to work before, you score a bonus 25 points for your company because we want to encourage folks to try this who haven't done it before. But also, even if your trip's only a half mile or a mile, you still earn 5 points for each trip.
So you can keep track of this all on the website, bikecommuterchallenge.org, which was, I thought, the great advancement in the Bike to Work Challenge when you could see what everybody else was doing. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, and I learned about Christopher Burke Engineering, and they're an engineering firm in Rosemont. They're pretty sustainable. They pay people by the mile all year long mm-hmm. to ride to work, and their mileage is incredible. I looked at them. I immediately had them on the show because, what are you guys doing? What's in the Wheaties there, and that they're you get to know who's who in the competition, and you can challenge people on the side at the website too.
Absolutely, and that's what makes it probably the most fun of all is when teams are challenging each other. And I know you're good at the talking a little smack. Yeah,
I want to challenge media teams, but there's none in the competition the last few years. WTTW used to play, mm-hmm. but they don't play anymore.
Well, we need to work on that.
And WXRT is the official sponsor of this thing, and I shamed Ryan Arnold into fielding a team, which I think had three riders or something. They could not get it together.
It's a start.
WXRT, the official sponsor of this thing.
Well, despite that, we still see hundreds and hundreds. One year we had 1,000 different companies participate in this. So it's relatively simple. I mean, I know we talked about providing all these incentives, but a lot of companies go relatively bare bones. It's, hey, one person is the team leader, signs up the team, sends around an email and says, join me. We're going to bike to work this week. It's going to be a lot of fun. Go to bikecommuterchallenge.org and register. And of course, as a team leader, if you're the person that does organize this, like John and Jerome here, we have these awesome team leader goodie bags. I brought one in today for Jerome.
Thank you.
That include a lot of neat stuff. And during the 2 week Bike Commuter Challenge event, you'll be getting some emails from us with tips on how to ride safely, you know, how to dress for the occasion. And obviously, we'll be telling you about the exclusive Bike Commuter Challenge events and happy hours.
Now, Jen, what do you tell people about safety? You're in the architect world, and I got to say, architects are well represented in the Bike Commuter Challenge.
Yeah,
they're like of all is every firm in town in? It seems like it.
Not quite every firm, but we definitely do challenge. We've actually challenged Smith Gill before a couple years back, and they're a much larger firm. But you know, it's kind of friendly challenges, so. Definitely the design community is well represented in cycling. I'm not sure what it is that attracts designers to
You guys are changing the city. Bicycling is changing the city.
It is
You're
all
trying to create a more sustainable thing. It
yes.
seems perfectly natural.
Yes.
And so should media companies be changing the city and thinking about the kind of urban architecture in the world we want to live in.
Well, it's exciting to see the range. You mentioned architecture firms and IT companies that are sometimes most closely associated with cycling. But you know, if you look at the list of companies that participate, it really runs the gamut. And I think that's a reflection on just how mainstream, you know, cycling has become in Chicago and other cities. It's to the point now where it's just the new normal, right? The new normal is we have a lot of bikes on the streets. And obviously, we're still working at accommodating all that new bike traffic and doing that well. Mm-hmm. But it's exciting to see so many more people biking, really getting behind it from all different types of companies throughout the city of Chicago. And that's, you know, Mayor Emanuel and the folks at Chicago DOT. I know you've had them on the show before, Jerome. They've really been doing a good job of building out the new infrastructure, including Divvy, right,
yep.
that we just talked about, to really make cycling easier in Chicago.
Ron Burke is here. He's the head of the Active Transportation Alliance. And John Castro, he's from Studio Gang, and they are one of the champions in the Bike to Work Challenge. I'm Jerome McDonnell, and you are listening to Worldview on WBEZ.
Should've got myself some bicycle wheels. Should've got myself some bicycle wheels. Should've got myself some bicycle wheels. On the wings of steel. There's dinosaurs and countries, every one that I've seen. There's dinosaurs and...
This is Worldview on WBEZ. I'm Jerome McDonnell. We've been taking a couple of days on Worldview to talk about biking, something that is changing our planet and changing it for the better. And today we've been talking about the Bike Commuter Challenge. And John Castro is here from Studio Gang and Ron Burke from the Active Transportation Alliance. And we are going to fold in our friends from Working Bikes. And Working Bikes is an organization that gives old bikes a new home, and they do a lot of good in between. Paul Fitzgerald is here. He is the general manager of Working Bikes. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
It's great to be here, Jerome.
For people who have never heard of Working Bikes, and I think if people were to inspect a bike rack pretty much anywhere in the city, they would see a Working Bike sticker on that bike. And that means they got it from you. You're out there selling bikes, reusing them, and for the people.
Absolutely. So we collect unwanted bikes, and we redistribute them both locally and globally as tools of empowerment. We fund our work by selling a certain percentage of these bikes, refurbishing them. And you can find us at 24th and Western. Stores open any day between Wednesday and Sunday, opening at noon. And we also have 5 volunteer opportunities a week.
You've got a super warehouse there at 24th and Western, and it's fun to walk into because it is just packed with bicycles and people looking for bicycles and old bicycles. It's got a real vibe to it.
We work a lot. We work at this – we talk about a culture of welcome. We want anybody who's interested in bicycles as well as in, you know, volunteerism and service – in you know, working with each other. We try to keep the space open, and we have the funkiest collection of bicycles for sure in the city of Chicago.
Absolutely. You can say that with total confidence. Paul recently sold me a bike. It is called a buddy bike, and it, I don't know, a friend called it the paddle boat of bikes, because you're able to sit on both sides of the bicycle on seats, and there's pedals on both sides of the bicycle, and you are seated next to each other. It's a crazy bike, and I got it from you.
Yeah, it's the sociable tandem is the proper term for a tandem in which you sit next to the captain and the stoker sit next to each other. You'd be happy to know we still have more than a dozen of these sociable tandems available at Working Bikes at 24th and Western.
They're super fun. But I got to say, there is a reason why the elongated tandem won in the design competition.
Absolutely.
People of varying weights can ride that one. But this one, it's a little tricky when you have people of varying weights on it.
Definitely.
Now, one of the things that Working Bikes is known for is bringing bikes to people all over the world. And you do shipping parties where you send bikes out to partners all over the place in Latin America and Africa. You just went to Lesotho.
Well, we actually have we have a partner organization, Bikes for Lesotho, and the founder, Dave Gorman, is in Lesotho right now distributing bicycles that Working Bikes has shipped. His partner in this endeavor is Tumi, who owns the first bike shop in Lesotho, Tumi's Bike Shop. And if you go to either of their Facebooks right now, you can see them distributing bikes at a feverish pace in the countryside of Lesotho.
That's completely awesome. And you also do a lot of things in our local community. You have some after-school programs that are going now?
We have a couple programs starting this summer. We have our first After-School Matters partnership for 14 to 18-year-olds, as well as a young adult apprenticeship starting up this summer for 19 to 24-year-olds. Which is through partnership with Chicago Fund for Safe and Peaceful Communities, as well as Instituto del Progreso Latino.
Wow, that sounds completely awesome. This is one of the cool things about bikes is they're a community-building tool.
Absolutely.
They can make it happen. Now, you come and help us out with tuning up the bikes every year. And you come and all the employees of BEZ come and tune up their bikes. And that's an important part of riding safely in the city.
Oh, yeah. Maintaining a bicycle is a key piece to being a bike commuter.
You got to get out there with horns. You got to get out there with brakes. You can't be out there without brakes. Ron, the statistics I've seen about safety are getting lots better here. And I was reading something in the Chicagoist the other day that seemed to indicate that more bike lanes is making things safer here.
Yeah, I think there's sometimes a misperception that cycling has gotten less safe because sometimes the headlines imply that. But the reality is, like you said, the statistics show that that's really not true. You know, over the last 10 years, for example, the number of bike crashes, injuries, and fatalities has stayed roughly flat. But at the same time, cycling has gone through the roof, right? The number of people cycling. So we've seen about 167% growth in cycling between 2005 and 2015. But the number of crashes, injuries, and fatalities has stayed roughly the same. Now, that doesn't mean we should rest on our laurels. By no means. We're not there. We need to drive that number down, down, down. But the fact that cycling has grown a lot and the crashes have stayed about the same suggests that the bike crash rate is actually going down.
John Castro of Studio Gang, what do you tell people who are afraid to ride? I'm looking to steal ideas from Mr. 100% ridership over here.
Well, you know, basically, it's a route. You try to find safe routes to work that are stress-free. And actually, the Chainlink and Streets Block Chicago, they just recently published kind of an overlay on Google Maps of safe routes or stress-free routes to work. And that I'll definitely use that to tell people, hey, look at those routes. Where do you live? Can you get on one of those? Because you don't want to be obviously, you're not going to get on Lakeshore Drive. Unfortunately, people have, or even, you know, LaSalle's not, or Ashland or Westland or Western. Yeah. You want to find those nice, quiet, tree-lined streets that barely a car on. It's just you and the leaves blowing.
And those low-stress routes that John mentioned, Jerome. You know, the study you referenced earlier was showing this link between the expansion of low-stress routes through the construction of protected bike lanes and buffered bike lanes and these kind of neighborhood greenway routes and the reduction in the bike crash rate. At Active Transportation Alliance, this is one of our top priorities, right, is trying to work with the city and suburbs. And we haven't talked a lot about the suburbs today, but there's a lot going on in the suburbs too, to create more of these low-stress routes, because we know the number one reason people don't bike is they're afraid of being hit by a car. They're looking for kind of a calmer environment, and that can be challenging to create in a city, in the suburbs, where, you know, cars often come first. But we're doing a better job of reordering our streets and creating complete streets that really work for everybody. We have a long ways to go, but it is getting better.
Yes, I can testify to that. I biked yesterday around Rand and Palatine Road in Arlington Heights, and there's nowhere to go, man. It is it is pretty
dead end, huh?
And it is the whole place is furnished for cars. It is all mm-hmm. it is a mm-hmm. car parking, car everything, car yep. driving. When you talk about where we've got to go and how much safer it can be, and while our crashes are dropping in Europe, the places that do this a lot, the Netherlands, Denmark, Germany, theirs are much lower than ours. Ours mm-hmm. are like four times as high as theirs. So we can get lots, lots better.
A lot better. In fact, traffic crashes of all types are lower in those countries, not just bike crashes. And if you've ever been to those countries, you know why. I mean, in cities like Chicago, we tend to have this, I call it a culture of impatience, you know, where we're always in a big hurry to go somewhere. It's fast, fast, fast. And, you know, and we see that kind of across the board, you know, whether people are walking or riding a bike or driving a car. Not everyone, but you see this. It's pretty common, right, in places like Chicago. If you go to Denmark, everyone is really cautious, conservative in how they travel, and that's one of the main reasons that you see a lot fewer crashes.
We're talking about the Bike Commuter Challenge. You can check it out at bikecommuterchallenge.org, and you can sign up your organization and get in the competition. It's running 2 weeks this year. It kicks off on the 16th. You're just gearing up the website now.
It's up, bikecommuterchallenge.org. We are taking you can sign up today, whether you're mm-hmm. a team leader or joining a team that's already existing. Get out there, make it happen, kick some butt. Who is going to top WBZ this year? Come on. We're looking for somebody to beat BZ.
You know, I got to admit, we were challenged by the Center for Neighborhood Technology for many years, mm-hmm. who was thrashing us, and we were coming in second every year. And then they fell out of our division. Their number of employees changed. Elevate Energies dropped a little bit. So they fell out of our division, and we won. So it was for the first time since 2009. We also lost to the Old Town School of Folk Music one time creating a bitter dispute that lasted years. But now we thrash them every year. And they ran out of the division and went into the educational division uh-huh. because they were scared of the Center of Neighborhood Technology for so many years. So there are some – and I'm sure the people in your division are scared of you. You're like 100%.
Well, we are – getting awfully close to the 99-person mark. So next year we might be in a different division. But then it's easier when you're at the low end of your division. So.
And let's keep this in mind. Let's just, for your listeners, Jerome, I mean, most companies are not getting 99-100%, okay? So let's have realistic expectations. There's companies that win with, you know, 5-10%.
We're in the division with a lot of the museums, and I challenge them to up their game. I don't know if the Art Institute or the Field Museum. I've seen them on the thing.
I think they'll be back.
But they don't seem to crack the single digits. Mm-hmm. Whereas we can pretty consistently lay 30% on.
Well, as you know, this year. But this year we're going to have a point system, so we'll see how that how well that works.
Well,
for WBEZ.
Some little astronomer is going to have to ride pretty far to the moon to get to beat WBEZ. I think. Now, Paul, do you guys compete? You guys are out there. You're in a division. You'd be in a division with other biking organizations. There's a special mm-hmm. division for mm-hmm. biking organizations, and they're all mercilessly competitive.
Yeah, and I think there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to humiliate West Town Bikes and Dream Bikes Cal City, Blackstone Bikes, and Bikes and Roses. I really think that we could, you know, all of our organizations are filled with bike commuters. I think that the tech savvy part has held us back in the past, but I'm looking forward to it.
I know you guys did an open table event recently where you talked mm-hmm. about biking and commuting in the city. What did you find out? What did you think through?
You know, I think what I really was impressed by was that you can have an open table event or an on the table event at a bike shop and have a bunch of social workers and educators come out who may not traditionally think of themselves as either cyclists or within the cycling world. So I think that's always my takeaway, is kind of when you open the doors and you see who actually is really excited about the possibilities, whether it's bike commuting or, you know, finding new resources.
And you look for that. They're looking for a different kind of city too, right? I imagine.
Absolutely.
They want to see a city that has less cars, I guess, is the easy way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think a lot of people are looking for a way to be positive and active in their communities, and bicycles can fit into that. And it doesn't matter. I mean, the things that are a barrier to cycling on the north side are a barrier to cycling on the south side as well. So, you know, the people need a place where they can really talk about this.
Yeah.
And they can have this conversation on equity.
And that's well said. I mean, a city that really works for cycling tends to be a city that's also good for walking and for public transportation. You know, even if you don't see yourself as a cyclist, a lot of people have told me, I'm probably not going to get on a bike, but I understand how that's good for the city as a whole. And so really we're trying to create these vibrant places that are equitable, that are healthy and green. And if it's good for biking, it's probably going to be all those things too.
How do you bring biking to lower income communities? It's got to be a trick. I know you guys did a bike giveaway last year. You did at Working Bikes. You gave away 500 bikes in Lawndale.
Yeah, well, we were able to partner with the North Lawndale Community Restorative Justice Hub and have a big one-day event where 500 children receive bikes. And again, I think that in most of these communities, people are riding bikes. I live in South Shore, and I see people riding bikes every day. And again, they may not, you know, put on special pants to do it. Some of them do, but you know, like a lot mm-hmm. of people still commute all over the city and may not identify themselves that way. But it's a way to sort of make sure that people feel empowered that they can ride around and get around.
Well, and if you look at the statistics about who bikes to work the most, the lowest income residents of Chicago and other major cities actually have the highest bike to work rate, which is very interesting. And just goes to show you that, you know, this is a vital mode of transportation for a lot of different reasons. It's not just the Lycra wearing CEO, you know, that's heading downtown, right? It's a lot of different people that are relying on this mode to get where they need to go.
Yeah. I think one of the other takeaways from the On the Table meal was that a lot of the people we engage with through our Cycle of Power and our Cycle of Peace programs, which are our real local initiatives to distribute bicycles in the community, that what's missing is further engagement. And that if you catch a flat and you don't feel comfortable changing in huge swaths of the city, you don't know what to do. You got to find somebody to fix the flat, and it becomes – the maintenance becomes the equity issue sometimes.
And the other equity issue there, Jerome, is let's just be honest here. If you don't have a job to go to, you're not riding your bike as much. And we know that underemployment is a big problem in a lot of our neighborhoods. If the jobs have moved out to Arlington Heights and you live on the south side of Chicago or in the south suburbs, you know, getting to that job can be hard, certainly whether it's – even if we're talking about public transportation. So you know, we need to – there's a lot of things we need to do to make transportation more equitable, and we're getting there. We're moving in that direction.
Ron Burke is the executive director of the Active Transportation Alliance. Thanks a lot to Paul Fitzgerald from Working Bikes for coming down. He's tuning up our bikes today so that we can get active in the Bike Commuter Challenge. You can sign up for it at bikecommuterchallenge.org. And thanks a lot to John Castro for coming down from Studio Gang, a perennial winner and in the 100% category all the time in the Bike to Work Challenge. Thanks a lot for joining us, John.
Thank you.
If you want to see Worldview in person, you can do so at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. We're taking the show there on the evening of June 19th, and we are going to be chatting about the deep state, persecution or paranoia, and we'll be talking with a couple of people who have written books about the United States and the deep state. So check that out, and you can get tickets at wbez.org/events for that event on the deep state coming up on June 19th. Worldview is produced by Steve Bynum and Julian Haida. Thanks to Veritan and Amber Fisher for production assistance and Mike Gilmore for engineering. I'm Jerome McDonnell. You've been listening to Worldview on WBEZ.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, Sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.